Morning. We're continuing in the Ein Yaakov. Actually, we did this already, so we're reviewing any Ein Yaakov, starting on page Chaf Aleph. Amar Eliyahu Tzaduki Rabbi Ami. A Tzaduki, or according to another Girsa, a Min, said to Rabbi Ami, Amritu Deshachvei Chaya. You say that those who are dead will come to life. Hahavu Afra, but they are dust. V'afra mi kakhaye. Can dust come to life? Amar Leim Sholach Hamashal Lamad Vardamel. I'll give you a mashal. What's it like? Lamelach Masar Adam Shemar Levadav. A king said to his servants, "Lechu benuli uvnuli paltering gedolim v'kom she'ein mayim v'afar." Go build me a palace, a large palace in a place where there's no water or earth. Lechu vanuato. They went and they built it. Leyamim naflu. Eventually, they fell down. He said, rebuild them in a place where there is earth and water. They said, we can't. Get angry at them. In a place where there's no water and earth, you built it. Now that there is water and earth, certainly you should have been able to build it. So too, Hashem could make us the first time out of nothing. He certainly, or out, you know, out of nothing visible, out of a little drop of liquid, then certainly the second time when our bodies have already existed and there's, so to speak, there's earth. Your question was, bodies have turned to earth. Well, that's a building material. So certainly Hashem can make us a second time. And if you don't believe that Hashem creates things out of the earth, go out to the valley and see the mouse. Today it's half earth and half flesh and half earth. And tomorrow it will have developed and be all flesh. Shema tomar lizman rube. So you see that Hashem creates things out of earth. Shema tomar lizman rube. And if you'll say, yeah, it'll take a long time. That takes time. Okay. And how can Chesed Mason be instantaneous? Alei lahar urei shayom ein bo ela chilazon echad. Go up to the mountain, and you'll see there's only one chilazon. And tomorrow, after it rains, the earth will be full of chelzonot. Rashi says that there are all these chilazon eggs in the lying around or inside the one chilazon, and after it rains, they hatch, and chilazon. And it's full of chelzonot, so you see it can happen instantaneously. Maral says, and don't say, yeah, but those are little creatures, little mice and little chilazon, whatever it is. Okay, but people can't be recreated instantaneously. Maral says, don't worry about that. For Hashem, there's nothing big versus little. It doesn't make a bit of difference. The Kuzari, it's a Maral in Chidush HaGadlos on this Gemara. Kuzari in Maamar Gimel, paragraph Yud Zayin, says, he's talking there actually about Berachos Kriyas Shema and about the Bracha of Yotzer HaMa'oros. It's nothing to do with our Gemara, but he says that for Hashem, there's no difference between creating the sun and creating an ant. And if anything, to the contrary, it's more impressive. The smaller creatures are more impressive than the big creatures. To fit the incredible machinery into a tiny little ant, an almost microscopic creature, is even more impressive than to fit it into the huge sun. Okay. That's an aside. The question I want to address is this mouse that's half earth and half flesh. Did Rabbi Ami believe there was such a thing? He says, go out and see it. Okay. Did Chazal actually believe such a thing existed? So this creature is actually mentioned in a Mishnah, in Chulin, Perek Tet, Mishnah Vav. It says, Achbar shechetzio vasar vechetzio adama, a mouse, which is half earth, half flesh and half earth, hanogea b'basar tameh, so a dead mouse is a sheretz, mekabel tumah. If you touch the part which is flesh, or if taharos touch the part which is flesh, they become tameh. Vadama tahar. If they touch the part which is earth, they are tahar. Mishnah tells us a halacha about such a creature. So does the Mishnah believe such a creature exists? So the Rambam says, and Rambam brings this halacha in Mishnah Torah, as Rambam brings virtually everything in the Mishnah and the halachic parts of the Gemara as halacha. In Perash Mishnayos, Rambam says, "Vavayot achbar b'lvad midan dama ad shimtzak tzato basar tzato afar." For a mouse to come out of the earth, so that it's half earth and half dirt, half flesh and half dirt and clay. This is very famous. There's no limit to the number of people who told me they've seen this. An infinite number of people have told me they've seen this. Even though it's shocking that such a thing should exist. I have absolutely no idea how to explain this, what to say about it. Rambam says, people told me they saw it, and I don't know what to make of it. Okay. In our introduction to Agadata, we mentioned Ramchal, same person who wrote Mesilas Yesharim and Derech Hashem and many other svarim. So he writes in his introduction to his Ma'amar al Ha'agadot, essay on Agadata, Od Zerach Sheteida. You also need to know Shedvarim rabim mekareis asodot yirmzum chazal binyanim min ha-teva o ha-tchunot. Many secrets that Chazal want to tell us, they will allude to them in nature, using references from nature or from astronomy. V'yishtamshu min ha-limudim shayu melamdim v'dorot ahim anshei ha-chokhma ha-tiv'it v'tchuna. And they will use as parables things that the scientists in those days and the philosophers of those days thought were true. But Chazal are not interested in that fact of nature or astronomy. They're interested in the secret, that the message that they're teaching. Therefore, it makes no difference for purposes of the message that's being delivered whether the example is a good example, whether it's true. Okay? As long as it's something that the listeners believe to be true, then you can use it as a parable. Hahu asher he'll be shua mitiolo. Sorry, stop in the sentence. So, okay, lo yosiv lo yigral amitata inyan and yirmaz heyot halavush hamishali ahu asher al bishu amiti olo. It doesn't, the lavush, the outer trappings, the clothing, in other words, the mashal, makes no difference if that thing is true or not. Ki kavanai ta lavish asarahu b'mashayam for sambadratahem. The purpose was to conceal the secret that's being taught in something that people in those days believed to be true. The same thing could have been dressed up in some other way. If the Gemara were written today, they would use, you know, physics, atoms and molecules and all kinds of other things as a mashal. So when we talked about Yediyah and Bechira, so you know, we talked about the idea that light is both a wave and a particle. Right. Two contradictory things that both exist. That could be a mashal for Yediyah and Bechira. And if tomorrow scientists change their mind and say light is not both a wave and a particle, doesn't make a difference to us because it was just a mashal. And if what the Gemara is saying was taught in these days, it would be different. So that is a general way to understand Chazal's use of scientific statements that today don't seem to us to be true. The doesn't answer the question. Did Rabbi Ami think that there's really such a mouse that's half earth and half mouse? The answer is not necessarily. It doesn't matter. Okay. The Rambam himself, right, seems a little bit skeptical about the existence of such a creature. The Mishnah mentions it. Rabbi Ami is saying to this person, I know you believe in such things. Okay? Really, such things don't exist. Okay? The Rav Chaim Friedlander, Sifsei Chaim, he says that if the Chachamim had talked, okay, could easily say, Chachamim didn't believe in such things. Okay? But if they had talked about things that they really knew, nobody would have understood them. It's like the mashal I gave when we first talked about this, that the Navi says that we'll go back to Eretz Yisrael on the wings of eagles. Right? Could easily mean an airplane. If the Navi had said, we'll go back to Eretz Yisrael in time of the Geula on an airplane, the people the Navi was talking to would have said, a what? What are you talking about? Right? So they had to talk in the language of those times. For Rabbi Ami, saying to this guy, look, I know you believe in such things. Since you believe in such things, you could also believe in Tfilas HaMesim. That doesn't mean that Rabbi Ami or the authors of the Gemara believed in it. Okay. Similarly, regarding the Mishnah, the use of that's in terms of Agadata. In terms of this creature being mentioned in a Mishnah in a halachic context, Rav Hirsch writes, he's referring to a German naturalist by the name of Alexander von Humboldt. And he writes, imagine, for instance, a man like Humboldt living in their age. He would set out on his explorative trips and report upon his return from a distant land that there existed creatures with a human shape but growing from the ground. That's a creature, something referred to in the Mishnah as an Adnei Hasadeh. Or that there existed mice produced from the soil, and that mice, half earth, half animal, and similar creatures were still extant, and the existence of such creatures was widely held to be true and factual. Would we expect Chazal not to discuss the status of these creatures from a Torah viewpoint and clarify their status in respect to ritual purity and impurity? Okay. Just like nowadays, okay, people like to ask questions. Actually, this is already old news, right? Once upon a time, people like to ask questions about, you know, how would you keep Shabbos on Mars? Or how would you keep Shabbos on the moon? Or on a space shuttle? Okay, nobody's going on a space shuttle anymore. Space shuttle's gone. But people want to know, how do you keep Shabbos on the space shuttle? Okay, people want to know, how do you apply the halacha to, it's not a perfect example, because the space shuttle did exist, right? But you think of some other example. Okay, people like to ask hypothetical questions. Okay. How do you keep Shabbos in this hypothetical situation? Or would a such and such, if such and such existed, would it be kosher? Okay. So if people believed such a creature existed, it's not surprising that Chazal would talk about it in a theoretical way. It doesn't mean that Chazal thought that it existed. For Friedlander, he mentions that, first of all the time, the Torah itself talks about things that don't exist. It goes back to the concept of Dibrator Al Kol Shomrei Adam, a different application than what we talked about last time. The Torah talks in words that we can understand. It talks about the Yad Hashem, the hands of Hashem, the eyes of Hashem. doesn't mean that we, and the Rambam goes to great lengths to answer those who think Hashem has a body. Hashem, all the time, the Torah talks in words that people are familiar with, in context that people are familiar with, and even scientists today, you can look up on the chart there from the Naval Observatory, sunrise and sunset. You mean the Naval Observatory thinks that the sun goes around the earth? How could the sun rise and the sun set? Okay, this is Friedlander's point. I think it's brilliant point. People like to mock Chazal, but even today in our own language, we use terms that we know are not scientifically correct. We know the sun doesn't rise and the sun doesn't set. It's describing an illusion that we see, right? And similarly, that's the language in which Chazal talk. That's Sif Sechaim, Pirkei Emuna, Bechira, pages 389 and 461. In general, it really gets into a broader question of the spontaneous generation and what Chazal believed about that. And in particular, it needs to be explained because we have halachos that are based on a belief in spontaneous generation, such as that you're allowed to kill a louse on Shabbos because since they're created out of nothing, or they're created out of sweat, or they're created, but they're not created from eggs, so they're not considered living things, and you're allowed to kill one on Shabbos. So in Michta Meliyahu, volume 4, page 355 and 56, it's a long footnote from the editor. The editor is of Aryeh Carmel, and he says that Rav Dessler told him just a number of different things that the Gemara says that seem to be contrary to our experience, and one of them was this regarding lice. And he says that halacha only deals with things that we can discern with one of our senses. Okay. Things we can see, things we can hear, things we can taste, things we can smell, things we can feel. Okay. Halacha doesn't deal with invisible things. This has lots of applications today in terms of, first of all, a few years ago, with drinking water, with the issue insects and fish. That was a big issue a couple of years ago. So he says, perhaps. First he says, it doesn't really matter. Halacha is halacha. If Chazal give a reason for a halacha that we believe is not true, so find a different reason for the halacha. Halacha is not going to change. Halacha is the halacha. Perhaps, since these eggs are invisible to the naked eye, and the time of Chazal, the eggs could not be seen, and people didn't believe they existed. Okay. So even Chazal knew they existed, but halacha doesn't deal with things that are not visible to the naked eye. And says, similarly, okay, we talk about insects that are born out of rotten fruit. Okay, insects aren't born out of rotten fruit. Their eggs are in the rotten fruit, but their eggs are invisible. So it appears that they're born out of the rotten fruit. Okay, as far as halacha would be concerned, they are born out of rotten fruit. Now, my father told me when my father was running the Eruv, so he went out once with Rav Einemer and another well-known Rav from another city, was an expert in Eruvin, and this other Rav came with all kinds of, I forget, it's a transit or some kind of fancy navigation device for looking at the, and he's standing there doing his thing, and Rav Einam returned to my father and he said, I don't think Moshe Rabbeinu had one of those. The point being, right, halacha doesn't require, this was Rav Einam's position, halacha doesn't require for when making an Eruv scientific precision. You look at it, it looks like the lechi is under the, obviously you can't do it casually, but you look at it, it looks like the lechi is under the wire. The lechi is under the wire. You don't need fancy devices. Has applications as well to, you know, are two letters touching the Sefer Torah? Okay. What if they don't look like they're touching, but with a magnifying glass that you see they are touching, or the other way around? They do look like they're touching. With a magnifying glass, you see they're not touching. Okay. Or, the you know, people take esrogim, and, you know, with like a jeweler's thing. Halacha deals with visible things. Halacha doesn't deal with the invisible, and even with things that are visible but not to naked eye. So that's a possible understanding of the halacha. Okay, back in the in Yaakov, we're on page Chaf Gimel. I'm going to take a page Chaf Gimel. Amrlei hahu mina or hahu tzaduki legvia ben psisa. Have it? Okay. A tzaduki said to Gvia ben Psisa, Oilachon chayava, says, woe to you, you rishayim, damritu mete chayin. You say that the dead will come to life. The chayin mite, those who were alive have died. Demite chayin, those who were alive died. Those who were dead come to life. Amar le, so Gviav Sisa said to him, Oy lechon chayava, woe to you, Rishayim, damritu mete lo chayin. You say that the dead will not come to life. De lo havu chaye, those who never existed can exist. De havu lo koshkin, those who did exist once can't exist. Amar le, so this tzaduki did what all smart people do when they've been defeated in battle. They change the subject and get angry. So he said, Amrlei chayava karitle, you call me a Rasha? I ka'imna ba'itnalach. Okay. If I get up in the time of Tchias HaMesim, I will kick you, upashatna lukmetach minach, and I will straighten out your hunchback. Amrlei imatal sekein, Rufei umanti karev sachar beititol. And Gvia ben Psisa said, if you can do that, you know, good for you. You'll be called an expert doctor and you'll deserve a lot of money. Okay. The quote here, Ben Yoyada, the bottom, who says, you know, most doctors, they give you a prescription, takes time to get better, okay, for the thing to heal. If you can cure me so quickly, okay, you'll really be an expert doctor and you'll deserve to be paid a very great deal. I didn't see anyone who says this, but it's possible that this is connected to the previous Gemara, in that, okay, Rabbi Ami said to Tzaduki, you know, maybe you'll think Tchias HaMesim will take a long time. Okay. No, it's, you know, it's instantaneous. It's not a problem for Hashem to do things instantaneously. Okay. Similarly, this Min was saying to Via Ben Psisa, you know, I'm going to give you one kick and fix your hunched back. And Gvia Ben Psisa says to him, wow, if you can do that, you'll be a really expert doctor. And by the way, don't think Chesam Esim is hard for Hashem, because Hashem is an expert doctor. And he can instantaneously cure any problem, any ill. It's my own chedesh, but it fits into the flow of the Gemara. Okay. Continuing in the Gemara, Tana Rabbanan, Vesrim va'arba'a v'nisan, intilu dimosna'e miyuda mirushalayim. On the 24th of Nisan, there's a book called Megillas Tanis, which is a catalog of days, although there it appears in a slightly different version. But the Megillas Tanis is a book of days when miracles of various kinds happened. And at one time it was prohibited to fast and say eulogies on those days. Today we don't observe, we still have the book, Megillas Tanis still exists, but we don't observe those days anymore except for Hanukkah and Purim. So on the 24th of Nisan, Intilu di Mosnaim Yehuda Yerushalayim, the certain challengers, scoffers, like tough guys, people who imposed terror on the people of Yehuda Yerushalayim, they were removed. Keshubau b'nei Afrika ladunim Yisrael, lifnei Alexandrus Mokdon, when the people of Africa came for judgment before Alexander of Macedonia, Alexander the Great, Amrulo Eretz Kanan Shlanuhi, they said Eretz Kanan is ours. Dichtiv Eretz Kanan ligvulotea. The Torah itself refers to it as Eretz Kanan. Kanan avon dehanau inshehave. And Kanan was the father of, was our ancestor. Okay. So Amar lehu Gvia ben Psisa l'chachamim. So Gvia ben Psisa said to the chachamim, "Tznu li reshut, ve'lech v'aduni mahem. Let me go litigate with them lifnei Alexandrus Mokdon in front of Alexander of Macedonia. Im yanatzchuni, if they defeat me, imru hedyot shavani nitzachtem. You'll say you just defeated a regular guy. Imani yanatzachotam, and if I defeat them, imru lahem, you'll say to them, Torat Moshe nitzachatchem. The Torah of Moshe defeated you. Netnu lo reshut. So they gave him permission. Halach v'dani mahem, he went and he litigated, he argued against them. Amar lahem, he said, Mechana tem v'im raya, from where are you bringing proof? Amru lo, they said, Mina Torah, from the Torah. Amar lahem, afani lo avi lachem raya, ela mina Torah. I will also bring you a proof from the Torah. Shnemar, Vayomer Arur Kanan, Eved Avadim Yelechav. It says, Kanan is cursed. He will be a slave to his brothers. Eved Shkanan Nechasim, Eved Lemi, Nechasim Lemi. If an Eved acquires property, who does the Eved belong to? And who does his property belong to? Yeah, the Torah says it's yours, but the Torah says you're an Eved. You belong to the sons of shame. We are from the sons of shame. So the land is ours. V'lo od. Just incidentally, their whole claim was a false claim because, as Rashi says in Parshas Lech Lecha, Eretz Yisrael actually was the property of the descendants of shame. And Kanan took it by force from the sons of Shem. So their whole claim had no basis in the first place. But if they want to make an argument based on the Torah, then they lose. Below od el ashrei kama shanim shalav av tunu. Not only that, but you're supposed to be our slaves, and you haven't been our slaves for a long time. So
You owe us. All right. Amarlu Alexander Shmalka. So Alexander, the king, said to them, Achziru lo tshuva, give them an answer. It's interesting that until now he's referred to as Alexandros Mokdon, Alexander of Macedonia. Now he's referred to as Alexander the king. Maybe now that he's showing his wisdom, he deserves to be called Alexander the king. So he said, Zero Chuma, answer them. And Rulo, they said, Tznan lan uzman, shosha yamim, give us 3 days to answer. Nanulahem zman, he gave them 3 days. Badku v'lo matzu tshuva, they thought it over, they couldn't find an answer. Biad barchu, they fled. V'inichu sidotem k'shen zru'ot v'karmehen k'shen nutu'ot. And they left their fields, planted, and their vineyards were also planted. V'otashana shvitaita. That year was a Shemitah, and Jewish people needed food, and these people fled from wherever they lived and left all of their fields planted, and everything worked out. It's not clear where their fields were. It says that they were B'nai Africa. They were Africans. Not clear if they were Africans living in Eretz Yisrael, and these fields were in Eretz Yisrael, or whether they came from a neighboring country, and they fled even farther away, and left their fields in the neighboring country. This would have halachic nafkamina in terms of whether the fields of a goy are subject to the laws of Shemitah or not, which is a discussion. Regarding this, in general, regarding the status of the goy's property in Eretz Yisrael, call them whatever you want. Okay. So, they bring here from the Ben Yoyada that Gvia ben Psisa's argument was risky. He said, you are sons of Canaan. Canaan is a slave. To whom is Canaan a slave? Not just to Shem, but to Shem and Yefet. Who comes from Yefet? The Greeks. Alexander the Great came from Yefet. So Alexander could have said, whoa, hold on a second. You mean half of Eretz Yisrael is mine? Okay. So that's why he says, that's why Gvia ben Psisa added a second argument. He said, first of all, this property belongs to us. And second of all, many, many years you have not served us. Then if Alexander had said to Gvia ben Psisa, you mean half of it is mine? Gvia ben Psisa could have negotiated with Alexander and said, how about this, Your Majesty? We'll take the land. You collect on all the years that they didn't serve us because they belong to both of us. So it was a brilliant argument on his part. Okay, continuing Gemara. Shuv pam achad ba'u b'nei Mitzrayim ladun im Yisrael lifnei Alexander Shmokdon. Another time, the people of Mitzrayim came for judgment in front of Alexander of Macedonia. Amrulo, they said to him, Hare Omer, Hashem Natan, to litigate against Israel. Amrulo, they said, Hare Omer, Hashem Natan Chen Am Beinei Mitzrayim Beashilum. Hashem gave the favor of the nation, of the Jewish people, in the eyes of Mitzrayim, and they lent them stuff. How about paying back all of the gold and silver that you took from us? Amar Gvia ben Psisa Chachamim. So Gvia ben Psisa said to the Chachamim, Snuli Rishut Velech Vaduni Mahem, Lifnei Alexandrus. Let me go debate them in front of Alexander. If they defeat me, you'll say to them, you defeated just a regular guy. And if I defeat them, the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu defeated you. So, they gave him permission. He went and he litigated, he debated against them. I don't know why after Gvia Bamsisa showed what a good lawyer he was the first time, he had to make this disclaimer again the second time. I don't have any explanation for that. Okay. I'm sorry?
One of them had to come first.
Okay, but then if he's going to win this argument, so why do you have to say it the other time? And it's going to happen a third time too. So I don't know why three times he has to make the same argument. So they gave him permission, and he went and he debated them. Marlam, he said, "Mechanatem v'imraya." From where are you bringing proof? Amrulo minatara. They said, "From the Torah." Marlam, he said, "Afani lo avi elachem raya elaminatara." I too will bring a proof from the Torah. Shinamar Moshav bnei Yisrael asher yashuv Mitzrayim, 30 shana v'arba'meot shana. The years that they lived in Mitzrayim were 430 years. Nu lanu schar avodah shel 60 ribo shishibaltem Mitzrayim, 30 shana v'arba'meot shana. How about paying us for the service of 600,000 people who worked for you for 430 years? Amar lem Alexander Shmokdon. So Alexander said to them, "Hachziru l'tshuva." Answer him. Amrulo, tna lanu zman shlosha yamim. Give us 3 days. Natan lem zman. He gave them 3 days. But kuv lo matzu tshuva. They couldn't find an answer. Miyad hinichu stotem kshein zirot v'charmehem kshein nituot. They left their fields and their vineyards planted, and they fled. Baruchu v'otashana shviteta. And that year was a shmita. And again, it worked out very well for the Jewish people, that they had fields to eat from during the Shemitah year.
This seems more likely that they would have been in another country.
Well, they also came from a neighboring country, from Egypt. So there, it's easy enough to go and get food. So, in terms of which one came first, in the first argument, they came and they said, "Give us our land." And Via Bempsisa said, "It's not your land, it's our land. And by the way, you owe us for all these generations that you didn't work for us." So Via Bempsisa now extended the argument backwards. And, you know, your great grandfather should have been working for my great grandfather, and he didn't pay me. So Via Bempsisa established a precedent for collecting a debt owed by prior generations. After he established that precedent, then the people of Egypt came and said, "By your own argument, you owe us, because your ancestors took money from our ancestors. Pay us back." Perhaps that might answer the question of why Gvia Bempsisa needed to ask permission again. "Let me handle this," because he created the problem. His argument is what gave the Egyptians the ammunition to come make a claim, because he established a precedent for making a claim that we're collecting something that was owed to your ancestors. So that could be. Okay, another story. Shuv pamachat vav bnei Yisrael bnei keturah ladunim im Yisrael ifnei Alexandros mokdon. Another time, the sons of Yishmael and the sons of Keturah came to for judgment in front of against Yisrael in front of Alexander. Amrulo, they said, Eretz Kanan shelanu v'shlachem, the land belongs to both of us. Shinamar ve'ela todot Yishmael ben Avraham, v'chdi ve'ela todot Yitzchak ben Avraham. At the end of last week's parsha, and the beginning of this week's parsha, Yishmael is called the son of Avram, and Yitzchak is called the son of Avram. They're both sons of Avram, and the land was promised to Avram. Amar lam gviya v'msisal chachamim, tnu li reshut ve'elech ve'aduni ma'im v'fin Alexandrus. Give me permission to go debate them. If they win, you'll say you defeated a regular guy. And if I defeat them, you'll say to them, Torat Moshe Rabbeinu nitzchatchem. The Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu defeated you. Natnula Roshut v'alach v'dani mahem. They gave him permission, and he went and he debated them. Amar lahem mechanatem v'imariya. From where are you bringing a proof? Amrulo minatra. They said from the Torah, because it says in the Torah, Yishmael is the son of Avram. Amar lahem. He said to them, Afani lo v'iraya ele minatra. Amar v'itein Avram mekol asher lo liyitzchak. It says Avram gave everything that was his to the sons of Yitzchak, and to the sons of the Pilagshim, of the concubines, Avram gave gifts. Av shekatav agatin levanav v'chayav v'shigir zem alzeh. If a father wrote a will dividing his property, and divided his sons and said, you go to the east and you go to the west, or you stay here. Klum yesh lezel ze klum. Can anyone complain? So the Torah already addressed this. Yes, you are sons of Avram, but he gave you what he gave you, and he sent you away. And he gave us what he gave us, and he told us to stay right here. My matanot, what are the gifts that he gave, just parenthetically, Gemara says, what are the gifts that he gave to the Bnei Apilagshim? Amar Rabbi Yirmiya bar Abba melamed shemasar lehem shem tuma. He gave them a shame of tuma. Rashi says he taught them magic and the action and things about shadim. How to use shadim or how to recognize shadim. Okay. Why did Avram learn magic? Usher, talking here, you know, about whether magicians, as we know them, whether that's an Isser, that's a halachic discussion. Okay? But here we're talking about, you know, what they call black magic. Why did Avram learn that? Because the Torah says, don't learn to do it, but you're allowed to learn to recognize it. That Ramban writes. Ramban lived in the 13th century. He writes that he went to witches and talked to them about their craft. He knew where to find them. He had questions he wanted to ask them. You're allowed to learn for, so to speak, academic purposes, not academic in the sense of college, but to know their halachos. You need to know. You need to be able to recognize it. You need to know what it is. So Avram did. Okay. The Rav Arya Kaplan, in one of his books, I think it's Meditation on the Bible. I don't remember for sure which one, but one of his books, he argues that meditation is a Jewish art. It's what Nevi'im did. But the meditation that's practiced today, you go to, you know, various Eastern things. He says that's the shame tuma that was sent away. He says that Avram sent them to the East. He gave them these practices, and he sent them away, and in the forms that we should not be doing. So he's absolutely not advocating going looking for these gurus. To the contrary, that's the shame tuma that Avram sent away, but. But in some, there is a Jewish form of these arts as well. That's Rav Aryeh Kaplan's argument in one of his books. Okay, have a good day.